Good afternoon. It's nearly noon and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station broadcasting from atop Signal Hill here in Kodiak, Alaska, where it's currently 38 degrees. It seems a lot warmer than it has been. Slight chance of rain and snow before 3 p.m. today, then a chance of rain. Mostly cloudy skies overnight. And they're calling for rain overnight as well. East wind to 40 miles per hour, should decrease to 30 miles per hour after midnight tonight. And for tomorrow, rain with a high near 43. Those east winds could gust as high as 35 miles per hour tomorrow as well. Coming up on the midday news, we get a new report from the EOC. An update on the Astra rocket launch. Jared Griffin tells us more about the City of Kodiak's remote sellers sales tax. And something about the library. After NPR News.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The U.S. Senate has approved a one-week spending stopgap to avoid a government shutdown. NPR's Kelsey Snell reports the legislation gives lawmakers a short extension to work out details of a long-term spending package and new coronavirus relief.
The Senate passed the bill by voice vote ahead of the looming midnight deadline. The measure was not without controversy and only passed after senators from both parties dropped objections. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders had been demanding a vote on his legislation to approve another round of stimulus checks for most Americans. He relented, but he says he will not back down again unless the Senate votes on his bill.
We cannot go back to our families during the Christmas holidays while tens of millions of families are suffering. They are looking toward us.
The funding extension already passed the House and goes to President Trump for his signature. Kelsey Snell, NPR News, Washington.
While vaccines are on the cusp of being authorized for emergency use, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is out with a report meant to help schools plan for reopening. NPR's Corey Turner reports the CDC tried to figure out how much it would cost to do it safely.
For months now, school leaders have wondered what it would cost to make classrooms and hallways as safe as possible for kids to return. So CDC researchers used a micro-costing approach to figure out what consistent mask wearing, social distancing, hand hygiene, and disinfection would cost per student. The answer varies by state, but on average, the CDC pegs the low-end price tag at about $55 per student. Adding custodial staff and transportation pushes that estimate to a high-end average of $442 per child. The report arrives as Congress continues to debate further COVID relief for states. Corey Turner, NPR News.
The national health and jobs crises in the U.S. is spurring President-elect Joe Biden to enlist the help of people who he says have been through it before. He's chosen former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack to serve a second tenure as Secretary of Agriculture. Biden explains why he insisted on Vilsack, even though the nominee was at first reluctant.
Tom knows the full range of resources available to this department to get immediate relief to those most in need and address the crises, not one, the crises facing rural America.
This, as a federal Indian Health Service says, it has been allocated enough coronavirus vaccine to cover 100% of its health workforce and residents in long-term care facilities. The Native American community has historically encountered far less access to adequate health care, higher paying jobs, and other benefits than other Americans. These disparities are amplified in a pandemic. Native Americans are four times as likely to be hospitalized with COVID-19. This is NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
While it should not be taken as a sign that the pandemic is abating in Kodiak, positive cases for today are at least substantially lower than they have been this week. The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization reports 22 new cases, including 18 close contact cases, 3 community transmission cases, and 1 travel-related case. These cases represent 3 cases not tested but not reported, that is, tested but not reported on the 7th, 3 cases on the 8th, 6th on the 9th, and 10 new cases tested on December 10th. There have been a total of 24 local hospitalizations to date. 6 patients are currently hospitalized in Kodiak. A patient was transported off-island yesterday for a higher level of care. This brings the total case count in Kodiak to 665 since the start of the pandemic, with 311 cases currently classified as active. Well, there will be no Astra rocket launch from the Pacific Spaceport complex today. Citing extreme upper-level wind shear and lightning that could be caused by the rocket, the California-based aerospace company scratched today's launch. The launch window for Astra's 3.2 rocket stretches to December 18th. In 2019, the city of Kodiak signed the Alaska Remote Sellers Sales Tax Commission Agreement with 14 other local Alaska governments to help collect sales tax from online sales. 1 year later, more municipalities have signed on, and it looks like the work of the commission is paying off for the state and for the city of Kodiak, as KMXT's Jared Griffin reports.
From March to September this year, the city of Kodiak collected more than $135,000 in remote sales tax revenue. That's the sales tax that many Kodiak residents started to see this spring on their online orders. This new revenue stream is a result of the Alaska Remote Sellers Sales Tax Commission, representing 33 local governments in Alaska. City Finance Director Julie Liu.
It was as a result of the Supreme Court case of South Dakota versus Wayfair, where they removed the requirement of physical presence and created an opportunity for sales tax collection from online sales from remote sellers.
Statewide, the Tax Commission has collected over $650,000 in September, up from $570,000 in July, reflecting an upward trend in online sales tax collection since the program started in March. For instance, in the first few months of the remote tax collection, the city received a total of $35,000. But since then, beginning in July, the city has collected an average of over $30,000 each month from online sellers. How will this new revenue affect the city's budget? At this point, the city is not sure.
You know, we're in the infancy of collecting sales tax from remote sellers, so it would be interesting, I guess, to see after a full year how that would look like.
To some extent, the remote sales collection will help offset the decrease in local sales tax revenue and in hotel tax revenue, which was down by $100,000 compared to the third fiscal quarter in 2019. The timing of this new revenue stream couldn't come at a better time, as Mayor Pat Branson said.
Yeah, it's good to see the numbers, too.
Mm-hmm. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jared Griffin.
While it should come as no surprise that foot traffic in the Kodiak Public Library has decreased during the COVID-19 pandemic, that doesn't mean there's nothing going on there. Mike Sarafchuk and Jan Chatto of the Kodiak Public Library Association and Lori Madsen of the Kodiak Public Library joined KMXT's news team on Talk of the Rock to discuss changes they are making to their fundraising strategy and the library's adaptations for COVID.
KPLA supports the library's programs, services, and collections through fundraising efforts and events, including book sales, book swaps, and outreach. And you can be a part of all this simply by becoming a member of KPLA. It's pretty straightforward. We're just here to help Lori in any way that we can, mostly financially, to make that library just one of the best libraries in the state of Alaska, I would say.
Mike Sarafchuk is a dedicated supporter of the library, and he says that one of the best ways to support the library's mission is to become a KPLA member.
You can go to our website, which is Kodiak Public Library Association.org, and you'll see several different ways that you can contribute just by clicking online there at the website. Another way that you can become a member or donate is Pick, Click, Give, very popular program here in Alaska, where you contribute a part of your permanent fund dividend to nonprofits, to charities, and so forth.
Lori Madsen, director of the Kodiak Public Library, says that the library is still open to the public.
We're making the most of a bad situation in that people are very thankful that we're being safe. We are now asking a series of questions related to travel and COVID exposure just to make sure we're not letting people who should be in quarantine. People have been very honest, and we haven't turned away people except two this week, but in the past we haven't turned anybody away. People must wear masks and practice social distancing. And we clean after everybody comes in. We're disinfecting everything. That's a big change to become a cleaning crew. But as I mentioned, we're doing Zoom. I'm doing a trivia game, or like a pub style trivia quiz, every other week. Got a good solid group of people who are enjoying that. It's a lot of fun.
Those interested in learning more about the Kodiak Public Library Association can do so at, all one word, kodiakpubliclibraryassociation.org. Canadian developers behind a proposed massive metals mine 20 miles from the border seek another permit extension from the BC regulators. If it's built, the KSM mine could be larger than the proposed Pebble Mine in Bristol Bay. The company behind the project says the pandemic has delayed progress. Critics argue that they're stalling, hoping to attract new investors. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, Alaska fishing interests and conservation groups are opposing the permit extension, while state officials remain silent.
The KSM mine received approvals in 2014 on the condition that it break ground within 5 years. At the end of its 52-year lifespan, it would be designed to hold back billions of tons of liquid mine tailings. 2 years ago, it received an extension, giving it until 2024 to start work. Now, citing the COVID pandemic, it's asked for another 2 years after that. Nikki Scoots heads Northern Confluence, a BC-based nonprofit that's critical of mine practices. She says BC authorities, similar to Alaska, have granted mine companies waivers to keep working as essential industries amidst the pandemic.
You know, maybe it cost more, maybe it was a bit more challenging, but we know that work did go underway this summer despite the pandemic.
The tailings storage facility would include dams holding back liquid mine waste. At its highest, more than 780 feet, there are some risks and liabilities.
You know, I imagine there's some risk aversion from some of the bigger players. They'd probably prefer to invest in mines that might not have as risky tailings facilities.
Southeast Alaska fishermen have long been wary of transboundary mining because of potential impacts on habitat on salmon-producing rivers and streams.
The KSM mine is up the Unic River.
Amy Daugherty heads Alaska Trollers Association.
You know, having low escapement year after year and having development up that very same river, it can, you know, shut us down.
Alaska and First Nation tribes have been monitoring mines being developed in BC's so-called Golden Triangle of mining projects on Southeast Alaska's doorstep. Rob Sanderson Jr. chairs the Southeast Alaska Indigenous Transboundary Commission.
Those tailing sites, you know, are going to be well over 600 feet high, and anything happens up there in that watershed, it's going to affect everything in our Southeast Alaska waterways.
In 2014, state regulators in Alaska registered concerns over potential impacts to fish habitat and water quality in the Unac River watershed. In 2017, state officials followed up with a fact-finding mission over the border, which included a flyover of KSM and meeting with mine executives and regulators. But this month, during a 30-day comment period, the Dunleavy administration opted not to weigh in. State regulators say they reasoned a permit extension wouldn't alter the project. Jill Weitz is an activist with Salmon Beyond Borders in Juneau.
This inaction from the state of Alaska is doing a disservice to Alaska and Alaskans.
Weitz says if the extension is granted, it'd potentially allow the mine to be developed using a 12-year-old analysis.
Again, we maintain that the state of Alaska, the Dunleavy administration, should join our congressional delegation in the push for international binding solutions to this
very much international problem.
The permit extension received two comments in favor. One was an anonymous email. The other came from a local mine consultant who's done work in the past for Seabridge Gold on a nearby mine. The company insists the mine can and will be built safely and responsibly. Seabridge Gold released a two-page statement arguing that the tailings facility would not impact water quality on the Alaska side of the border. Austin Williams of Trout Unlimited says it's understandable that British Columbia seeks to develop its mineral resources, but he says it's got to be done in a way that's responsible.
That doesn't put all of the burden and the risk on Alaskans and, you know, really gives us some certainty that if something goes wrong with the transboundary mines, that Alaskans aren't stuck paying the price.
BC's Ministry of Environment and Climate Change Strategy says Seabridge Gold will be required to respond to the written comments. If the ministry rejects the permit extension, Seabridge Gold still has until the summer of 2024 to find a partner and get started. Otherwise, it'd be back to the drawing board. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Thank you, Jacob. There's a new app for nature watchers, and you don't need to know much about what you're seeing to make the Ocean Alert app work. Say you're driving past Spruce Cape and you see a humpback.
You could say, I saw a whale, not have to know what species it is or anything like that.
That's Jacob Levinson, a biologist with the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management.
Or you could say, you know, I saw this whale, here's a picture of its tail, and then there's an artificial intelligence backend, Flukebook, that tells you if that we've seen that whale before.
Levinson and other BOEM scientists are using the new Ocean Alert app to crowdsource sightings of marine megafauna that will inform the agency's work in federal waters. That basically means large animals you can see swimming from your car or boat or front porch, Levinson says.
When it comes to megafauna, you know, we're looking at for stuff that you could just see with your regular eyes. You know, no need for microbes or anything like that.
BOEM oversees offshore energy and mineral development on both U.S. coasts and in Alaska's federal waters, including potential oil and gas lease sales in Cook Inlet. Part of its work is identifying how projects could impact animals that live in a given area. To do that, it needs a better snapshot of what local ecosystems look like and how animals are moving in and out of those areas.
Well, the ocean's a changing place. It's pretty cool because things are always changing. There's always something showing up and going away. And scientists really can't be everywhere at once. And so we made this app for a way for just anyone to better work with scientists.
The data collected through the app will never provide a full picture of the ocean's wildlife in any given spot. But alongside other information, it gives the BOEM a better sense of where endangered species are throughout the year, which helps it plan projects. Levinson calls this method of data collection citizen science. It's a strategy already used with apps like eBird and iNaturalist. Flukebook is one piece of technology scientists are using to interpret sightings. Much like facial recognition software, it can detect markings on specific whales and determine whether that specific whale has already been identified.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. It's a near record for Southeast Alaska's Dungeness crab fishery. More after this.
The Alaska Marine Safety Education Association provides Coast Guard accepted training for fishermen across Alaska. Learn more at amc.org.
Both the catch and number of boats on the grounds were down a bit for Southeast Alaska's Dungeness fall crab fishery that wrapped up on November 30th.
So far, we've had 790,000 pounds caught in the fall season, and we usually catch right around 1 million in the fall.
Adam Mesmer is area shellfish manager with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game at Douglas. He says 104 crabbers dropped pots this fall compared to 192 for the summer crab fishery, likely due to a low price.
I know just anecdotally talking to people because of the price being so low that there was quite a few larger boats that didn't go this fall that normally do fish.
Mesmer says selling dungies directly to customers at the dock helped boost the price from the low of $1.68 a pound for the summer season when the bulk of the crab is landed.
For the fall, we had $1.91, up a little bit from the summer.
The average price for the 2019 season was $3.07 a pound. Dungies weigh about 2 pounds on average. Still, combined with the summer fishery, which came in at just under 6 million pounds, it adds up to a near-record catch for 2020.
With the fall season what we have entered so far, we're at 6.7 million pounds, which is the second highest season on record.
The region's highest Dungeness catch ever was 7.3 million pounds in 2002. The most valuable was last year at $16.3 million to fishermen on a 5.3 million pound harvest. Up next for Southeast will be tanners and golden king crab, which open in mid-February. A king and tanner crab task force meeting from 1 to 5 this afternoon will give an assessment of the Southeast crab stocks and management outlooks for 2021. The virtual meeting is linked on Zoom. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
KMXT's Island Messenger, supported in part by the Kodiak Daily Mirror, your hometown newspaper since 1940. Now online at www.kodiakdailymirror.com.